The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Oh, good evening, everyone. And so I just came back yesterday from teaching a retreat at our retreat center together with my one of my first teachers, my Zen teacher, Mel Weitzman, the abbot of the Berkeley Zen Center. Can everybody hear okay? I can't quite tell. I'm a little bit higher? How's this? Is this better now? I can't tell. I went swimming before coming down here. And I didn't realize until now, starting to talk, that I have water in my ears. So I don't know what I'm hearing. It all sounds kind of off to me. So I just have to trust that it's working, the voice. So I was teaching this retreat, and Mel is a Zen teacher, and we taught it at our retreat center. And so one of the kind of themes running through the retreat a little bit was Zen and Vipassana, Zen and the kind of practice we do here coming out of Theravada Buddhism. And so coming out of that retreat, I would like to share with you a little bit about the practice of mindfulness and different ways in which it can be practiced. So mindfulness is the basic practice that we do when we do insight meditation. And mindfulness, as we know, has become quite popular in the West. In many clinical settings, people are using mindfulness for all kinds of personal benefits. And but what exactly mindfulness is, how it's practiced, varies from setting to setting. But if we take mindfulness very broadly to be the practice of using our attention to notice what's happening in the present moment. And that is a very special capacity. It's a very ordinary capacity that we all have, because throughout the day, you are using your normal, ordinary ability to notice what's happening and to be present for it. Just as I hope you're paying attention to me as I talk. You're using your capacity to be mindful, to pay attention. And in addition to paying attention to just very simple, basic awareness of what's happening, you are processing what's happening in the present moment. You're engaging in it, maybe, in a variety of ways. One way is maybe you're thinking about it already, wondering, where is this talk going to go? And, it doesn't seem to be much going so far, so, but I hope it gets better. Or perhaps you are processing it by thinking about work, and it's hard to stay present, and the mind keeps going off, and you bring back, or you're processing it by being completely riveted by it, and you're on the edge of your seat, and kind of breathlessly waiting for the next thing. You're engaging in some ways, and so there's more is going on than simply the simple attention to what is. And so it's the more that's going on, what we add to attention, that's very interesting. But before I talk about that, the fact that human beings can pay attention is like a gem. It's like a very precious. And one of the things that happens to people who do a lot of practice is that attention itself, awareness itself, mindfulness itself, begins to stand out in highlight so that it becomes more and more special. more and more wonderful, the fact that we're even paying attention. As opposed to, I believe that what's often the case is that we tend to be involved in what we're paying attention to. We're preoccupied about what we're interested in. So, this is the extra part that we add. So, sometimes our capacity for attention, that energy of attention, of attending to something, happens on automatic pilot. We're not choosing where our attention goes, and some juicy thought or concern arises, and the mind gallops off, thinking about it, analyzing it, figuring it out, solving it, whatever it does. And we get pulled along into that world so much that the fact that you are paying attention is completely lost to you. We get lost in the world of thoughts, lost in our concerns. Or we might know that we're kind of paying attention, but we're so interested in what it is that's happening. And so we're kind of oriented towards what's happening. So it's kind of like we're looking at a mirror, and, mirrors are pretty special. I don't know how long human beings have had mirrors, but in the old days they would polish bronze or something, and before that, the old days, they had to go down to the pond and look in, and hope there was no ripples in the pond, and they kind of see something, reflection. But mirrors are pretty special. And most people, most of you, I'm pretty confident, probably have at least one mirror in your home. And you probably don't think very much about how special a mirror is. You're more interested in what you see in the mirror. You look in the mirror and you look and at the person who's looking, you're looking at that person, and is there toothpaste coming down before you leave, and so you can clean it up? Or, I have to look in the mirror to see if there's shaving cream on my face, because my family laughs at me because I keep forgetting to clean it from under my ear. There's always one spot. So that my family won't laugh at me, I have to look in the mirror. And we put on makeup or lipstick, or we adjust our hair. And my guess is most of you, in using your mirror, do not think, what a special thing it is to have a mirror. Wow. So smooth. It reflects so well. It's an amazing thing to have in a mirror. If you imagine 5,000 years ago, if you were just walking around and living your life, minding your own business, and before they had any of this, and someone came and showed you a mirror, wow, it would have blown your mind. And now, toothpaste on my face, what's going on, right? My hair sticking up. But the specialness of the mirror. So it's kind of like that with awareness. It's a very special thing that we're aware, and we tend not to notice how special it is. As people do practice, awareness becomes stronger and stronger. And as it becomes stronger, it stands out in highlight, and you start seeing how special it is. And how in the awareness itself, there is freedom to be found. In the awareness itself, there is love to be found. In awareness itself, there is something very freeing that's very different than if we're involved, that's not there if we are preoccupied by what we're thinking about, or if we're caught in what we're paying attention to. So the art of mindfulness practice is shifting where our energy goes, shifting where our center of gravity goes from what we're paying attention to at some point noticing attention itself as being its own thing. And that thing, that attention becoming stronger. So how do we get there? So one of the ways is, the kind of thing I wanted to say today is that when I was practicing Zen, before I was introduced to this practice, in Zen, they do teach mindfulness. Sometimes they don't use that word. But the Zen teacher that I studied a lot, the ancient Zen teacher, Dogen, he had a description of mindfulness of the body. It's very telling about what mindfulness, how mindfulness is practiced in Zen. And that is, he said, mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. Mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness. And that's a very different idea than mindfulness of the body is being in the control tower in your head and looking down and observing your body as if you're the agent in the control tower in your head, wherever, and you're directing your attention to the body, you're using your attention to pay attention to different things, and you're in charge and you have to do it well and you have to apply yourself and the mind wanders off and you have to come back, and it's you, me doing the work. In Zen, the idea was the mindfulness, this attention, is there innately. It's just operating. And it's not operating in the control tower of the brain or the head, but it operating throughout our body. All our senses, the sense apparatus that the body has, touch, smell, sound, hearing, tasting, touching, and so forth. All those perceptional apparatus we have combine to create awareness. And the body just operates by itself. The body awareness is there. We use it all the time, even without paying attention to it, to find our way and to feel what's going on. And so for this Zen teacher, Dogen, he appreciated how awareness or attention or mindfulness doesn't require an agent to do it, but rather mindfulness is something that could happen if you get out of the way. So you get out of the way of it, or you relax, or you. For sometimes I say, and then you drop the sense that I'm the one who's doing. Just relax. Relax and let go. And what do you find in that, and open up kind of? And in that relaxing and opening up, you will be aware. Yeah, hopefully, hope you're following me. Hope you're aware. So it's very telling, very interesting sometimes to do this little exercise that I'll now instruct you to do. So the instruction is to stop paying attention. Don't notice anything. Cut it out. And when you're told don't pay attention, what happens? What happens to some of you?
You start paying attention.
Are you paying attention? You start paying attention. It's a little more active. Is there another way of saying it that you're not so actively involved? If you stop paying attention, what happens to? So your attention is there, maybe. What's the quality of the attention that happens when you're not stop paying attention? When you stop doing it? What?
You just
notice stuff. What else? Yes, Amy. You have to be really loud from out there, because especially with my ears full of water. It's hopeless. Maybe you could use the mic. Is there a mic over there? Or? Green light?
The awareness actually seems more stronger, heightened.
So the awareness is stronger when you stop doing the awareness, paying attention. So that exercise points to a number of things. One is that awareness is something that happens without you trying. And that it's possible to relax or let go or get out of the way and allow the natural awareness to operate, or the innate awareness to operate. So in Zen, that was more the direction of practice, was you don't do the awareness, you allow it to be there. You get out of the way of it to be there. In Vipassana, in the Theravada tradition, for the most part, the way that mindfulness is often taught especially for people begin the practice, it's not something you allow for, it's something you actually do. Bring your attention and focus it on your breathing. Notice whatever is happening and bring your attention, really focus and bring your attention and pay attention there. And so there's much more a sense of an agent who's doing it. And so in some ways that's pretty wonderful, because it's another wonderful thing of human beings that we have agency and we have choice and we can direct attention to different places. If we didn't have that ability, our lives would be a mess. And some people find that through practice, they develop their capacity for choice. They develop their capacity for focus and directing their attention. And it's a nice thing. However, at the same time, it lends itself to me, myself, and mine. It's up to me. I'm in the control tower. I got to do this. And sometimes the extra thing that's brought along is a lot of selfing, a lot of self-conscious effort to practice. And some people will tie themselves in knots because of being self-conscious in their practice. And sometimes some people don't see the difference between being self-conscious and being self-aware. Being self-aware is just a neutral, open awareness to what is happening here with us. Self-consciousness is being somehow wrapped up in it or anxious about what we're aware of as we become more and more aware here. This divide between a kind of practice where we mostly get out of the way and allow something else to happen, and a practice that we're the ones who are doing something and we have to do it, is beautifully represented in Japanese Buddhism. There's a wonderful school of Japanese Buddhism called the Pure Land School, Pure Land Buddhism. And they have this idea that there's two ways of practicing. There's practicing that relies on self-power and practice that relies on other power. And self-power is your power that you, it's up to you. You're the agent, you have to do. You've got to get it right. And other power is what they do, the Pure Land School. And they don't believe that it's possible to use self-power to get anywhere. You have to rely on other power, on the power of some other being. Like, so in AA, they talk about a greater power, and you have to trust or rely on the greater power. So it's a little bit similar to that. And they have a notion of a kind of a cosmic Buddha that in many ways functions like maybe the Protestant God that can save you through an act of grace. And so you have to rely on grace from God to be saved. You can't do anything yourself. So no salvation by works is what the Protestants said. And Catholics were supposed to be the ones who said salvation by works. And so these Pure Land people said that there is this cosmic Buddha, that you have to rely on that Buddha, this other power. And for many centuries, it seems that in Japan, some of the most saintly, some of the deepest spiritual people in Japan were coming out of this Japanese Pure Land tradition. But for the Pure Land, so they said the other people do the self-power thing, and the other people are the Zen people. And they had this idea that Zen was much more about, you know, you have to kind of make effort, you have to practice, you have to meditate, you go to monasteries and do any work. And the Japanese Pure Land didn't believe in meditation, because meditation was self-power. You're doing something. So they wouldn't do any meditation. They wouldn't do anything. All they would do was hope for the, or, you know, pray, or in some sense for grace. But even praying for grace was doing something. So they would, you know, you couldn't really do anything, almost. And so that letting go, can be very powerful. So this divide between self-power and other power plays out in every individual person's practice. Not other power like a, you know, some god that's going to save you, but there's a balance, very important balance to be found between the practitioner needing to do some of the work of practice to apply themselves to practice and not taking too much responsibility or not trying too hard or making space and allowing for something else to operate or something to evolve or something to unfold that is not your doing in the practice. And how to negotiate that is part of the art of this practice. Because if it's all, some people are so self-conscious in their practice that it's all about, I have to do it. And they come to meditation with the usual mode in which they do almost anything. Self-conscious, I have to do it, I'm not good enough, it's up to me, I have to do it. All this, you know, and if they're used to kind of working really hard, they've gone through graduate school, they've worked really hard, they've been focused all the time, they realize how to be stay up late and really be bore down on their task. They come in to meditate and they think, well, that's what I have to do for meditation. I have to really try hard and bore down. And they tie themselves up and, you know, it doesn't really work. The effort to practice oftentimes can't be the usual self-conscious way. It can't be the usual way in which we apply effort. But we have to apply some effort. And so the idea of allowing for something else to operate in our system, our psychophysical system, besides that part of us which is our effort, is very important. So trust, relax, open up, don't try, let go, are all practices that support this allowing for something else to unfold. One of the analogies some of you know I like to tell is If you can cut your finger, maybe you're in the kitchen chopping vegetables and you cut your finger a little bit. And if you have to keep it clean if you want it to heal. You don't go, you know, notice that your septic tank is dirty and, you know, and clogged and take your unprotected cut finger hand and stick it down into the septic tank and kind of unclog it and, you know, and then kind of say, well, I don't have really have time to go clean up and, you know, go around with this dirty hand and, you know, it's not a very, you know, then certain things happen. So some things evolve. Your hand gets infected or something. Your job, your responsibility is to keep the cut clean and maybe covered. But the healing of the cut happens without you as the conscious agent directing the healing. There's something here operating in your hand, in your body, that's not, doesn't belong to you in the control tower doing it and making it happen. It's too complicated for your little mind, your little conscious mind that thinks it can manage life, to figure out this amazingly complex biological event of healing the cut. It's a very complex thing. Chemicals and enzymes and proteins and all kinds of things come into play. And but the body knows what to do and it heals it. The same thing for our hearts or our psychology, our minds, that it also has processes in place that can heal things for us, that can help us to grow, that can open up to new realms of ways of being in the world, to new realms of love and peace and presence. And we have our role to play, but we also, it's very important to allow something which is not our effort to be involved as well. So our role might be to clean the cut and then keep it open and clean and aerated. Our role might be to show up and be present. Our role might be simply sit down to meditate. But, you know, meditation doesn't work unless you do it. So you have to, you know, you have a role to play. And then when you sit down to meditate, you have a role to play there too, once you're sitting down, to notice if you're drifting off in thought, to notice if you're caught up in what your mind is thinking. And notice that you're caught up and you say, I'm not going to do that anymore. That's not what I want to do. and kind of start getting disinterested in the chatter and the thoughts and ideas you have in your head. You have a role to play there. But you have one role you have as well is to not only come back and wake up, but also to open up and allow, make space for something to operate that could not operate if you're always in charge. And I talk to many people who meditate who take too much responsibility for what's going to happen in their meditation. They try too hard. They think it's all up to their effort. They think that they have to get somewhere, and they're measuring themselves, and they're pushing themselves and trying to get someplace. And if it's not going so well, they just try harder. Making this effort, it's up to me, me, me. And it's only partly up to you. You have to make space for something else as well. There's self-power, and then there's other power. But here, the cosmic Buddha is you. Is a part of you. It's part of your inner life, that, like the healing of the cut. This inner life can unfold. And it's, you know, as simple as if you sit down and stop and let go of your concerns and thoughts and sit quietly, your body will start to relax. Some of the tension you might be holding from the day will begin to soften and relax and let go. Even if you're not trying to relax, you'll relax. As you relax, sooner or later, you probably feel a little bit better about yourself. You probably feel more sense of well-being, content, a little bit happier, more settled, happy that you're not kind of lost in your preoccupations or caught in running around. And this idea of relaxing, being content, becoming happy, are some of these inner things that begin to evolve and can evolve and nourish us if we make space for it. But if we keep trying and being the one who's responsible, I'm going to do it, it's up to me, we don't make, then it's harder to make space for this other stuff to unfold and happen. So this Zen teaching that mindfulness of the body is the body's mindfulness speaks to this idea that we make space for the innate capacity for the body to be attentive, to be aware, to be perceptive, and then we get out of the way and allow, see what comes. And we have to do it over and over again. Here, open up to this body. How does it feel? What's happening now? But it doesn't, you don't have to open up to just the body. You open up to all your senses. What's here? And notice. So one of the ways that I like to do this, especially when my mind is really busy, is, and I have trouble kind of reining my mind in or staying present for what is I say the word here, very quietly, softly in my mind. I just say here, H-E-R-E. And I don't say it like a command to a dog. Rather, I say it just gently. Because I want to acknowledge where I am. I'm here, right here. And then I kind of open my attention up wide to notice what is here. How am I here? And if the primary thing that's going on is my mind is really busy, then I'll just notice here is a mind that's busy, and it's like this. This is how it is. And by doing that, I'm making space to open wider than the preoccupation. I notice that that it's there, but I'm not caught in it, I'm not fueling it, and in that space, something begins to settle. It's like I'm not fueling the preoccupation, but I'm also not trying to quiet it down, I'm just opening up to, yes, like this, this is how it is. And I do it again, here, what's here? I open and notice, allow, to notice whatever comes into awareness if I say here. As opposed to, uh-oh, my mind is drifting a lot. I better bear down on my breath and really get focused and overcome all this distraction. So I have a role to play. So that's a self-power, which is to remind myself to show up here. And then I get out of the way and allow something else to unfold by just being curious and allowing opening and letting whatever wants to show itself to show itself here. This is how it is. So the balance between self-power and other powers, or being the agent of practice and being the recipient of practice, being the person who practices and being the person who's practiced. And as we do the practice more and more, a very strong feeling that some people can get is, I'm being practiced. Wow, I'm being done too. How does this happen? You know, and sometimes you can't believe. Sometimes it's so remarkable, the things that unfold, that it does feel like grace, because you know, the levels of peace, well-being, love, compassion that's there, that somehow seems to arise with no, you know, without you being the one who created it and made it. So I feel that often with concentration. Samadhi or concentration states are very nice experiences to have. But I don't take responsibility for getting concentrated. I take responsibility for being present, creating the conditions, showing up. And if I keep doing it, then something inside of me evolves, unfolds, and I get concentrated. And when I get deeply concentrated, it really feels like grace. And I like it that way, that I create the conditions and it comes. So these two sides of practice, the side of you have to make some effort and figuring out what that effort is, and then also allowing for something to unfold or show itself, which is not up to you. And how to negotiate those. And sometimes we emphasize one, and sometimes you emphasize the other. It's not like a formula, like, you know, 50-50 or 20-80. But it depends on what's happening. Sometimes you have to do a lot of self-effort to really kind of overcome very strong distractions or preoccupations. And sometimes you do almost no self-effort at all. No agency. Not up to you. You just kind of more get out of the way. Let go, let go, let go. The less you can do, the better. Because it's all unfolding in the present moment. The practice. So, I don't know if this makes sense to you, but we have about a little less than 10 minutes. If some of you would like to ask a question about that, or ask for clarification, or anything else you'd like to bring up.
So sometimes when I'm meditating, sometimes I'll have some strong negative feelings come up, and then something like kind of pleasant will kind of skitter by, you know, it's just like just make me a little flash, like a little notion, or it's just I sit in a window when I meditate, and maybe the sun will break out of the clouds, and suddenly there'll be light, or something pleasant will happen, and so I'm kind of sitting with the feelings, and sometimes they're heavy, and then this thing will happen, and then it'll go away, and I feel like I have an opportunity to just sort of direct my attention in that direction.
To the pleasant thing that's happening.
Yeah, and it, sometimes I do, and sometimes I don't. Is there a way of handling that that's better? I mean, there's a thing where it's like it's happened to me, and I have some choice. Maybe I could exercise it.
You're saying you have a choice between two different directions to go. You can go to the difficult feelings that are there,
right,
or you can go to the pleasant feelings that are arising as you meditate.
Sure, yeah.
Great. And so if you have a choice, which ones do you take? So what answer? I think the most meaningful answer to give is to experiment. If it's happening, you know, multiple times, try different things. See what happens if you switch your attention to the pleasant and see what evolves from that. And then see what happens if you keep opening to the difficulties. Sometimes that's the best thing we can do. The inner life has amazing capacities for healing that sometimes require us to really go into the difficulty that we have and actually allow it to get worse, get stronger before it can get better. So trust that and go and experiment with that. And sometimes what's nice to do is not to choose at all, but let it be chosen for you. Just relax and just notice that there's just two different things going on, and just kind of let go or relax more into awareness and see what arises. See what the strongest thing is that comes up. And there might be a third thing you haven't discovered yet.
So just try stuff.
I call it experimenting because experimentation means that you learn from the results. You see, well, that happened. If I do X, what happens? You try different things and you see what you learn about yourself. You see what it teaches you about what are good directions to go. Okay? So straight back there. Is there? Yeah, you can give. You can keep. Phil, you can keep that here and give it to him. Yes.
I've had the wonderful opportunity to take your beginner's online class. One of the things that I absolutely love to do is listen to the downloads on my commute. And one of my challenges at this time is being able to let go of my work as I drive home. And I was wondering if you have a particular download that you can think of from one of your talks that would be helpful.
I don't listen to my talks. So I don't.
I do.
So I don't really know what's on there.
Great stuff.
Yeah, is it? Is it? I don't know. I don't even title them. So occasionally I go back to see and go back and look for something, and I look at those titles and. I can't help you. I don't think maybe someone here, anybody else, listen to these talks that can recommend one. Yeah, Phil.
Well, I just listened like to bunches of them. There's two.
Use your mic.
There are two really good places to get podcasts. One is Audio Dharma, which will be all from here, and then the other one is Dharma Seed, which seems to be predominantly Spirit Rock, but not all Spirit Rock.
IMS as well.
Yeah.
But she wants a particular one for her commute that helps her let go of her work life.
I wouldn't listen to the same one over and over.
You would not listen to the same one over and over. Oh, just keep listening to new ones, maybe. But anybody else listens to these things? Abraham, all the way in the back. What a strange thing to have. This is being recorded for Audio Dharma. People are listening to this, and we're talking about.
I just have a suggestion that I use. I chant. I do 5 minutes on one syllable, five on another syllable. Okay. It's a bit of a different style, but that works for me, and it
Great.
Really clears
so that helps
my
you
mind.
Let go. That helps you let go. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
So it's a combination of putting yourself into something of controlled, but then you're also opening yourself to what the experience is of it as you're experiencing it in your body.
Great, thank you. So here, if you could pass the mic too.
I can say this. So I think I just had a great insight because...
Can we go closer?
I said I just think I had a great insight from when you were talking to him, and... The other day, I was flying, and I had this experience with the people around me, and thinking, I try to be aware, and so when I opened to the situation, it was very painful, and so the insight I think I got was, I'm supposed to learn something from that and not push it away or, you know, see what it is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. We don't have to push anything away. There's something very meaningful and helpful about bringing attention to what's going on in our lives. And and to do it with that. And sometimes it's very powerful not to have preferences, but rather bring attention to what's happening. And if what's happening is really difficult, it's to bring our attention to that and learn from that. And from a Buddhist point of view, one of the things we're trying to learn, there's many things to learn, but one of the things to learn is how to be present and free at the same time.
It's hard. It was interesting. I was watching it. It was kind of a situation where I kind of felt...
Yeah, because of my ears today, I can't hear.
Oh, sorry. It was a situation where I was sort of left out.
Yeah.
And I was trying to notice my feelings about it and what was really going on and why that was happening. But, yeah, so rather than trying to avoid those feelings, I the insight I got was to...
Great.
Just be aware.
Exactly,
of
yeah.
Somehow. Yeah.
It's a good thing. So you wanted to ask something.
So you talked about saying here when the mind wanders. Sometimes it feels like there's nobody there to say here. Once the mind has gone off, he's running around, and there's just no one who can say here.
Yes, but then there's no problem either. If there's no self, then there's no self to have a problem. It's only afterwards when you notice the debris that you're like, oh, now I have a problem. I have to clean up.
So is there some way to bring back awareness to the fact that it's gone off?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, this is the great question is that everyone faces is the mind wanders off a lot, and when you're gone, you're gone. So one thing is that when you do notice that, really appreciate the difference between being gone and lost and having woken up. And now I'm not lost anymore. And rather than berating yourself and being upset, oh, I was gone for so long, that was so bad, that doesn't help. What helps is, wow, I'm back. I was gone for a long time, but this is what being back is like. Because the more you appreciate it, the more it becomes starts to become a habit to want to come back. And then you could also do certain things to increase the frequency of coming back. You could have you could set your timer to go off every 10 minutes. So you wake up. You can have little cues to help you. But you can also practice meditation. One of the reasons meditation is such a good training is that there you're intentionally trying to be present, be present, be present. And that's what your primary thing you're trying to do. Whereas in daily life, the primary thing we're trying to do is something else besides paying attention. And so we're not developing that muscle of attention. So as you practice meditation formally, the muscle of attention gets stronger and stronger, and the habit of being present becomes stronger, so that when you leave meditation, you're more likely to come back. You had more?
No.
Okay. So maybe last one, we should stop.
Lately, I've been working on trying to link together my mindfulness more continuously. And interestingly, it's a little bit easier at work than it is with my kids, for example. But I have a very cognitively challenging job. And I heard one of your podcast talks that you talked about being mindful of your body while you're interacting with people.
Yes.
And how you try to do both at the same time.
Yes.
And I've been playing with that. And I'm finding it difficult to be both in both places. Do you have any tips?
Don't try so hard. Maybe you might be trying too hard. I kind of do it simultaneously, but I've been doing this for a long time. Maybe you need to kind of just alternate. you know, to do a few moments there, a few moments here, go back and forth.
That's what I've been doing.
And then experimenting, I think, is good. So one of the things I've learned to do when I'm listening to someone is, this is where this thing about not being the agent is very important. Because if I'm the one who's trying to pay attention, then I'm using a very narrow spectrum of my capacity for attention. But if I relax and open up and like I, rather than hearing through my ears, I try to hear with my whole body. And that way, there's much more aware of the physical body, what's happening in my body, while I'm listening, because I'm listening for my whole body. And I find that if I open up the awareness and receive what's being said in a field of attention, then it's kind of like there is no boundary or difference between what's inside me and outside of me. And so that no difference allows me my attention to be encompassing both what's happening here with me and what's happening outside. I think many times we live with a difference. Inside, outside, me, them. And if there's no me and them, but just there's experience, a field of experience, then it's easier to be aware of the whole thing. Does that make some sense?
I'll play with that.
Okay. So the one thing I was hoping to convey today is to appreciate this wonderful difference between your job, what you're responsible for, that you have to show up. You have a role to play. But you also have important, there's something else that's operating also. So it's very important to allow for something else to happen. And you have to negotiate these two sides. Learn what is your role and learn what's not yours and hold them together. Learn to relax so to allow something else to happen. And that's just not just your effort and your doing. No one can tell you exactly what the proportion of those two should be. And as I said, it changes over time, changes in different circumstances. But to know this principle, these two sides, can help you more easily negotiate and find the balance that's needed in each situation. And if you only know about self-effort, then you're limiting the full operation of what can happen. So, and if that didn't make much sense, you can leave the Dharma talk here. Or turn off your podcast if you're listening. So, thank you all.